just knew that this number was very, very important and very easy to mess up and very hard to recover. So I was hit with $1,000 fee, and I was just so scared and discouraged and ashamed. It got me really curious about what other personal finance topics I had been fearful of, but that don't actually deserve my fear. And it feels awesome to have a little bit more confidence and context about something that I used to be so afraid of. Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, a space for underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Sophia, and usually I'm joined by Tan, my co-host, but today I wanted to share some things that happened to me very recently that prompted me to learn a lot about personal finance. Personal finance is a skill that I have responsibly avoided for years. And I say responsibly avoided because I've done what I've considered to be the basics and the basics of being quote unquote responsible. But I've avoided learning more, even though I've wanted to learn more. So some things that I've always done is I always keep track of spending at a high level. I always automate my credit card payments and set up email alerts if automated payments don't go through. And I've always used a lot of Microsoft benefits to get reimbursed for medical expenses, like my contact lenses. However, things I've avoided, compared to my personal finance savvy friends, it's a little embarrassing, or I'll say I've felt embarrassed by how little I know. Some of my friends have purchased condos and homes. They know a ton about which stocks to invest in. They seem to know their way around every credit card point system. And I felt like I didn't know anyone like me. I simply wanted to dip my toe into a couple small, safe, basic improvements to personal finance. And it's been on my list to learn things like how to smartly spend my credit card points, or understanding a credit report, or small ways to optimize my credit score. So in this episode, I will share the situation, a kind of scary situation, that kicked off a weekend of digging into safe and easy steps to improve my personal finance and also my mentality and confidence about personal finance. And I will also share the tips that I've learned. And they're mainly from this TikToker named Your Rich BFF, or Vivian. She's this Asian American woman who was a former Wall Street trader. And she has a lot of tips and tricks for making your money work for you. So none of these ideas are original. They're all from her. So breaking down this episode, I'm going to share some of my beliefs around personal finance, the top actionable advice that I learned, and what I'm planning to learn next. And I personally also hate it when people tell you what to do, but don't break it down into literally the 10 things you need to click. So I will try to do that as much as possible over audio. So, okay, let's start with how this all started. Like, it's been on my to-do list for about 4 years to understand these things in personal finance, but what actually nudged me to take action? So I want to talk about two contrasting experiences that I had about personal finance over the last 2 years. So I had a really bad experience 2 years ago that left me really shaken and discouraged and scared about anything personal finance related. 2 years ago, I had just purchased a new car and I was setting up a monthly auto payment on my car loan. And my loan was through BECU and my bank was Wells Fargo. What I wanted to do was to set up an auto payment where Wells Fargo would automatically transfer money to BECU every month. So the first step was to set up that connection between Wells Fargo and BECU. So long story short, I called the BECU helpline to double check that I was setting everything up correctly. The customer service rep walked me through the instructions and verified that everything was right. However, 1 month later, I got a scary email about a fine and a warning that I had missed my first payment. And I was shattered. I thought I did everything right. And I was so scared of what this meant for my loan and my credit score. I knew nothing about a credit score. I just knew that this number was very, very important and very easy to mess up and very hard to recover. And I was just so scared and discouraged and ashamed. And I delayed calling the helpline and I let this fear absolutely snowball. I stopped checking my email because I was so scared to see that scary email from BECU. And I finally bit the bullet a couple days later and I called BECU and learned a different method for setting things up. And then I spent that next month in fear that I would get another email that I did all wrong. And it took 6 months of successful, smooth transfers to go through. It took 6 months before I started feeling more relaxed. And this experience was so scary because, one, I felt misled by an employee who was supposed to give me the correct information. And two, it was the first time I needed to hop on the phone multiple times to resolve a very time-sensitive issue. And yeah, I did learn a lot about credit score and credit reports in the process, but I was so frazzled and so new to everything and so unsure about who to trust that all the information just scared me more than it ended up helping me. So that was 2 years ago, a very bad experience. And then recently, another experience that was bad at first, but then turned into something very empowering. So, long story short, in 2022, I went on a couple work trips and I spent a lot of money on flights and hotels and food. And there was one aspect of my reimbursement that was not set up properly. So I was hit with a $1,000 fee. My coworkers were CC'd on this email about this humiliating $1,000 fee. And my coworker mentioned, like, hey, I hope this didn't impact your credit score. Again, I was shattered and terrified. And even though I never had issues with my corporate card in my 4 years of using it, I suddenly lost all confidence that I was a responsible person worthy of help to resolve the issue. And I had no idea where to start. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll sign into my Microsoft Expense tool and dig around. I'll sign into my American Express, my Amex corporate card account. And I struggled because I had to reset my password a bunch of times. And then the dashboard was super confusing. I couldn't even tell where the $1,000 charge came from or when it came from. And so I'm like, oh my God, I have to call the Amex customer service rep. And she was confused too. And I just wanted to give up, but I didn't want to hand over $1,000. Like, that was just so much freaking money. And it was so scary. I turned off all the lights in my room to force myself to focus. I downloaded all of my transactions. It was like a hundred, it was probably 100 lines worth of transactions, like money that went out, money that came in. And I went through line by line and I marked off what money went out, what money came in, which expense report included the $3 charge I had for my coffee. So just literally line by line, 100 times. After an hour, I pinpoint the issue and I reached out to my business manager apologizing for my mistake and giving her a heads up that I was happy to pay the $1,000 myself, but I just wanted to give her a heads up first. And to my surprise, she said it was actually valid from Microsoft to still reimburse me, that I didn't have to pay for that $1,000 flight out of pocket. And this experience ended up boosting my confidence for a couple reasons. So first of all, my efforts worked out. Like, 1 hour of crying and focus and attention to detail resulted in the most satisfying relief and in money back, $1,000 back. And my efforts ensured that this issue didn't hang over my entire weekend, which would have sucked because it was actually a really big and happy weekend for me. And the second reason this boosted my confidence was that in the moment, I felt so ashamed and afraid, but my business manager didn't seem to think it was a big deal. So the takeaway is just ask for help, especially if the help is worth $1,000. Like, she probably was like, oh, I've seen this a bunch of times. She didn't say anything mean to me at all. She was like prompt at helping me out. So thank you so much. And the third reason that this boosted my confidence was that this process forced me to understand how my corporate card system worked. And, the first few minutes of looking through my spreadsheet, I was super slow. It was really cumbersome, but I caught on pretty quickly. It made me think, like, hey, maybe I'm underestimating myself. It's actually really fun to understand what's going on and pretty easy to understand what's going on. And that 1 hour gave me confidence that honestly felt priceless. And so this amazingly turned around experience with my corporate card, it got me really curious about what other personal finance topics I had been fearful of, but that don't actually deserve my fear. So I was scrolling through TikTok this weekend. I stumbled upon Your Rich BFF's TikTok videos, and I was like, this is a sign. I can't simply like the video and save it and move on. I'm gonna actually go on my computer, follow the video step by step, and set up a high yield savings account and do all the other things that she recommended. And it was very easy to do. So yeah, these are some experiences that motivated me to even look into personal finance. So now I want to talk about the beliefs that blocked me from exploring personal finance. And maybe you share these beliefs as well. So the first belief is that the credit system is predatory and exploitative and unintuitive and scary, so I should engage with it as little as possible. Examples of this include, did you know that you should never close a credit card, even if you don't use it? It's better to keep a credit card open with no transactions than to close it. And this seems so unintuitive and weird. But after all of my research, I now know that financial institutions often assume the worst about you, aka they assume the worst about the customer until you prove otherwise. And yes, this is predatory and it can be pretty exploitative. That's very true. But it's not necessarily unintuitive and scary. So once you understand some basic principles about how credit cards work, how banks work, how do they make money, what are they incentivized to do? Once you understand these things and a lot of other things, and rules start to make sense and they feel less random and less scary. So in the closing credit card example, there are actually many reasons that your credit score drops if you close a credit card. One example is a financial institution might assume the worst about you if you close a credit card. For example, they might assume that you know you have bad self-control about keeping a credit card open. And if you keep the card open, it means you have $5,000 of credit available to you. And if it's available to you, you're going to spend it even though you can't pay for it. And so even if this is not true for you, financial institutions don't want to take on the risk of quote-unquote irresponsible people. So they make their rules based on worse assumptions about you. And that's why these rules seem weird, but when you kind of understand how financial institutions work, the rule makes sense and it makes their rules seem less arbitrary and more understandable. It doesn't seem like random facts you have to memorize, but you kind of understand like the system and logic behind these rules, which makes you feel like you can learn about personal finance faster. That was the first belief that kept me, that blocked me from exploring personal finance. The second belief is that if something is too good to be true, it's too good to be true. You should avoid good deals. For example, if a bank offers you a really high interest rate for your savings account, which means that they give you a lot of money for keeping your money in that savings account, too good to be true, don't use it. It's fake. They're just trying to catch you, you know, trick you later. This isn't necessarily the case. If you learn how different institutions make money and how they save money, then everything makes a lot more sense and it becomes easier to distinguish what's risky and what's safe. And so I'll actually go into this more later when I talk about high yield savings accounts, which on the surface seem too good to be true, but they're actually really legit. So I'll talk about that at the end. Amazing. So now let's talk about some key terms and concepts and institutions that you should understand that will make all the rules around personal finance make a lot more sense. So the first thing I want to talk about is a credit card. We probably all use credit cards to some extent, but it still helps to understand as an institution, like why credit cards exist, how they make money, why they charge you so much for things, and how to use credit cards without being exploited by credit cards. So credit cards used to be really confusing to me because let's say I'm using the Chase Sapphire Reserve credit card. Why does Chase let me pay for things on credit, aka money that is not leaving my bank account immediately? Like, why does Chase let me do that? How does Chase benefit from that? And why do I benefit from using Chase or any credit card instead of cash? So this is like a two-sided question, right? So I'll start with how does Chase benefit? So Chase, for example, as a company or the credit card Chase Sapphire Reserve, credit cards earn money in many ways, and I'll just share two that are most relevant to you and to me. First way they make money is from interest. So let's say I spend $100 on my credit card in January, and then I repay off the $100 by the end of February. That's awesome. The bank will make no interest fee on me. However, let's say I forgot to pay the $100 by the end of February, or let's say I only paid off $50, but I had $50 I had not paid off. Then the credit card is going to make a ton of money from me in the form of interest rates. So when you see APR, that pretty much means the annual percentage rate or the interest rate that the credit card makes on me. So let's say I spent $100 on my credit card and I did not pay it off in time. The APR is 20%. That means I have to pay $20 in interest fee. on top of paying the $100 that I spent on my credit card. But that is not all. In addition to paying the $20 in interest fee, the credit card might also charge me a late fee. Let's say it's a $50 late fee. So that means I end up paying $170 for putting $100 worth of purchases on my credit card, but forgetting to pay for the $100 in time. You are totally safe to use credit cards if every month you pay off what you spend. But if you don't, credit cards can make money off of you in terms of interest rate and fees and other ways to make money too. So then you might think, okay, if a mistake can cost me so much money, why would I use a credit card and not just pay in cash or use my debit card? That's a really great question. So there are a lot of reasons to use a credit card, but I think the most common reasons are, one, when you use a credit card and you pay back the credit card in full every month, you are proving that you're someone who only spends money, who spends money responsibly and only spends money that they have. Your credit score will improve over time. And I'll talk more about a credit score later. A second reason to use a credit card is it actually protects your money. Oftentimes, credit cards offer benefits like if someone stole your credit card and bought a computer, you can actually turn to your credit card company for help and to dispute the claim. Whereas if you just paid with cash, well, no one's going to help you get your cash back. And third, credit cards offer a lot of perks, or what they call cash back or like points. So why do companies offer credit card perks? At a very high level, these credit card perks incentivize you to spend money using that credit card. So the credit card can make money off of businesses who accept the credit card and make money off of you when you make a mistake. Frankly, that's how it works. So I'll give you a concrete example. Your credit card might give you 2% cash back on your $10 Chipotle order to motivate you to spend at Chipotle. So the credit card gets money from the transaction fee from the business, and it gets money from you if you miss a payment. Back to interest fees, if you spend, let's say, $100 at Chipotle a month because you're excited about the 2% cash back, and then you forget to pay your bill in time, your credit card can make $20 off of you because you spent that $100 using that credit card. Okay, and the third concept is credit report and credit score. So what is the difference and are they related? Yes, they are related. A credit report is like a report card with a detailed breakdown of your grade in every class. And a credit score is like your GPA, which is just one number that summarizes all your grades and that employers use to infer how quote unquote smart you are. Let me give you some more details about what goes on a credit report. A credit report contains a lot of information like what credit cards you have open, what loans you're currently paying off, and the most legitimate way to download your credit report is annualcreditreport.com. And downloading this credit report will not hurt your credit score, so you should do it to make sure that the information is correct and that you can dispute any issues before they stay on your record for too long. And then your credit score is one number that summarizes and quote unquote predicts how responsible you're going to be with your money. There are a lot of factors that impact credit score, like your payment history, credit utilization rate, credit history length, your credit mix. There's actually a lot of different companies that make credit reports and calculate credit scores differently. So why is a good credit score important? If you prove you're responsible with money, then others will trust you and loan you money with a low interest rate. For example, let's say you want to take out a $20,000 loan to buy a new car. If your credit score is great, like 740 and above out of 850, then your interest rate is going to be a lot lower than if your credit score was only 600 out of 850. So that was my breakdown of some key concepts with credit cards, credit card perks, and credit reports and credit score. Now for the exciting part, the most actionable things I learned from watching Your Rich BFF. The first is to reduce your mental load of keeping track of different accounts by setting up an account aggregator like Mint. So I used to avoid checking in on all my various accounts, like my stock brokerage, my bank, my car loan, etc., because I did not want to download a bunch of different apps and log into all of them and check them one at a time. Now I use Mint and it's one click to see everything all at once. It just makes me feel like I'm that girl, you know, like I can see all my info in the same place and I'm not struggling and opening 10 apps at the same time. So Mint is great. The second thing I learned was smart ways to automate paying off your full credit card bill. And this is something that I have been doing, but there were actually some additional optimizations that make me feel even more at ease. So when you're paying off your credit card bill, there's actually two entities or two like institutions that are involved. The first is your credit card, for example, your Chase Sapphire Reserve credit card. And the second is your bank. So throughout the month of January, I will be swiping my credit card and accumulating money that I have to later pay off. So let's say I spend $2,000 on my credit card in January. Typically, by the end of the next month, for example, by the end of February, I have to pull money from my bank to pay off the $2,000 payment I had accumulated on my credit card. Let's say you expect to spend $2,000 on your credit card every month, but there are some times when you might want to spend more. Maybe if you're moving to a new city or you're traveling, you might want to or need to spend $5,000 a month. So how do you set yourself up for success? The first thing is to set up your bank transfer date a couple days earlier than the final deadline the credit card company sets up. So let's say the credit card says by the last day of the month, you have to pull money from your Wells Fargo checking account so that you can pay off your $2,000 credit card bill. Instead of automating that money transfer on the last day of the month, you can do it 5 days before the last day of the month. That way, if anything goes wrong, you have a couple days to correct the issue. The second thing is, if possible, automatically pay off the credit card payment in full. Do not just pay the minimum fee, which is usually like $50. You're gonna eventually have to pay the full credit card payment anyways. So the most hassle-free and inexpensive way to do it is just to pay the credit card payment in full every month. The next tip number three, is to put your money in a high yield savings account. So what is a high yield savings account? Why is it legit? A high yield savings account is a savings account that has a high interest rate, which means that if you put money in the savings account, you get a lot of money from the bank for keeping your money there. So why is this better than the alternative? So let's compare a high yield savings account with a regular savings account in a traditional bank. So a traditional bank like Wells Fargo has a very, very, very low interest rate of 0.01%. Which means that you might be working really hard, saving your money, putting your money in the bank, but the bank is not giving you any money for keeping your money there, which is not cool, right? Let's say you're working really hard, you've saved $1,000. If the interest rate is 0.01%, that means you get only 10 cents. Like, what the heck, right? So what you want to do is transfer your money into a high yield savings account. So for example, Marcus by Goldman Sachs has a 2.5 APY, which means a 2.5% interest rate. Now, if I transfer my $1,000 from my Wells Fargo savings account to my Marcus by Goldman Sachs saving account, my $1,000, the same $1,000, gives me $25 at the end of a year instead of 10 cents. One tiny caveat is that the interest rate is variable. It can go a little bit up and down. So the interest rate might be 2.4% or 2.6%. But I would still much rather be in the ballpark of a 2.5% interest rate than a 0.01% interest rate. So you might be thinking, this sounds too good to be true. And that's great. I think it's great to be cautious to look into why this is possible, right? Going back to understanding the incentive structure of different institutions and learning why they are incentivized to give you such a good perk. Marcus by Goldman Sachs is an online bank. And an online bank is cheaper to run than a traditional brick and mortar bank like Wells Fargo. Because, for example, an online bank doesn't have to pay for rent of a physical building in the way that a Wells Fargo has to pay for rent, right? There's like a Wells Fargo in every big city in the US probably. That's like a lot of money. So because the online bank is saving that money, is saving the operating cost, they can pass those savings on to customers like you and me. Maybe you're still wondering, how do I know that it's safe, right? Great question. So let me break it down for you. Here were the four factors that I looked into that led me to trust putting my money into Marcus. So one, there is no minimum deposit. If you want, you can deposit $1 into Marcus and test things out and take your money out if you don't like it. Two, there's no credit check. And this is amazing. This makes this option more accessible and available to folks with lower credit. Maybe you've made some mistakes in your credit card in the past, or maybe you're just starting to build credit. So that's also a really amazing feature of Marcus. Third is there's no transaction fee. So that means I don't have to pay money to keep this savings account open. So let me give you an example of when a transaction fee would suck. So let's say I put $1 into Marcus and make 2 cents, and then I had to pay a $5 transaction fee for moving $1 into the account. That's just so annoying and ridiculous, right? It makes it hard for me to test this out. So there's no transaction fee. Fourth, it allows same day transfers. Why is this important? So let's say my Wells Fargo checking account is running low. Let's say I spent $10,000 on my credit card this month and I don't have $10,000 in my checking account. I need to pull some money from my savings account. Well, Marcus offers same day transfers, so I can quickly transfer my money from my Marcus savings account into my Wells Fargo checking account and pay off my credit card bill. So again, these were four factors that led me to trust putting my money into Marcus. So again, it was no minimum deposit, no credit check, no transaction fee, and same day transfers. And this is actually a high yield savings account that your rich BFF recommends, and she recommends three other ones, which are the American Express High Yield, the Ally High Yield, and the Synchrony Bank High Yield Savings. And I've linked all of this in the episode description below. All right, the fourth tip that I wanted to share is how to use credit card points and get cash back. This is something that I've wanted to learn about for a really long time and just put off learning about because it seemed like there were so many options, so many perks, ways to optimize your perks. I was just scared that I was not optimizing my perks, so I just didn't touch my points, which is fine because my points don't expire. Let me break down what to consider when spending your points and how to actually spend your points, like click by click, where to click. So you may have heard the phrase, "Ooh, this credit card is great for travel." What does that mean? That likely means you, one, earn a lot of points when you use your credit card on flights or hotels, and when you redeem the points, you get the most cash value on those points. So again, there's like two sides to understanding points. There's the earning points and then the spending points or redeeming points, same thing. So, earning points. You might have heard, ooh, this credit card gives me 3% cash back on travel. What does that mean? If you are getting ready to book a flight or a hotel or Airbnb and you use your Chase Sapphire Reserve credit card and you spend $1,000, that means you get 3% cash back. So 3% of $1,000 is $30, which means you get points that are worth $30. And usually 1 cent equals 1 point. So that means you get 30 times 100, which is 3,000 points. And Chase Sapphire Reserve, for example, they might give you 3% cash back on travel, but you might get a different percent cash back on different categories. So different credit cards offer different cash back on different categories. The categories can be streaming services, restaurants, groceries. So great, you've been accumulating all these points. How do you spend them? And why do people like to spend points on travel rather than on restaurants? So let's go back to the example when you spent $1,000 on travel, you got 3% cash back, so you have 3,000 points, which is typically worth $30. So how do you spend the points? A lot of people like to spend points on flights because for a lot of credit cards, when you spend 3,000 points on flights, it's actually worth not just $30. It's worth more. It's worth $45. That's why it's called a 1 to 1.5 ratio for points. So in other categories, the ratio might be 1 to 1, so $30 worth of points can only be spent on $30 worth of restaurants. But for travel, oftentimes, $30 worth of points gets you $45 worth of cash on travel items. Or in other words, the same 3,000 points equals more real money when you spend those 3,000 points on travel than on any other category. So how do you like actually use these points on the flight and take advantage of this ratio? So let's say you're using your Chase Sapphire Reserve credit card. You log into your Chase account. Then on the very top, you'll see earn slash use points. It's a dropdown. You'll click the dropdown and you'll see a lot of different options for earning or using your points. So let's say you want to spend it on travel. So you can click the airplane icon to see the travel portal. Then you type your destination. Let's say I want to fly from Seattle to Portland and I see a flight that's worth $45. So I could pay $45 in cash or spend 3,000 points. And you might ask, okay, if I am a Alaska Airlines member and I want to accumulate Alaska Airlines frequent flyer flight points, is this actually a smart move? Yes, because in your Chase portal, you can buy the flight with points and still accumulate flyer miles because you're putting in your airline membership number when you buy the flight with your points. So this might sound a little bit overwhelming, but I promise it becomes more clear if you log into your credit card travel portal and you actually look at the numbers yourself and calculate the numbers and the ratios yourself. It's kind of hard to explain over audio. You really just have to see the numbers and calculate it, and it'll make a lot more sense. So the good news is that if you've never used your points before, that's actually amazing. As long as you don't manually close your credit card account, your points are available because they don't expire, and you can accumulate your points until you want to travel. Like, I've never spent my points on travel yet, so I have a lot of points to spend on travel. But what if you do not want to travel ever, let's say? How else can you spend your points? There are other options, but they're usually not as great of a deal because the point to cash ratio for other options is lower. It's typically 1-to-1 instead of 1-to-1.5. Let me give you an example. When you click earn or use points in the dropdown and you see all the other options, you'll see tabs like cash back or gift card or pay with points on Amazon. For example, if you click gift card and you spend 3,000 points on a Chipotle gift card, you're only going to get a $30 gift card, not a $45 gift card. That's because the ratio of points to cash for gift cards is not as favorable as the ratio on travel. Another option is if you choose the cashback option and you say, I'm going to spend 3,000 points and I want the credit card to deposit money, literal cash, into my checking or savings account. The credit card is only going to deposit $30 into your account. Again, because the ratio is 1-to-1. Like, your 3,000 points is only going to give you $30, not $45. And so, again, that's why travel is such a popular category, because for a lot of different credit cards, the ratio of the points to the cash is most favorable for travel. So now you might be thinking, okay, a credit card gives me a lot of cool perks. Should I open a lot of different credit cards and get different types of perks? So that leads me to the fifth actionable point, which is to have this checklist when deciding whether to open a new credit card. When you're opening a new credit card, your rich BFF recommends three consideration. The first is to think about complementary categories. So you should think about the categories you spend the most money on and find a credit card that is complementary in cashback it gives to you on those categories. So let me give you an example. Let's say your two top categories for spending money are travel and groceries, and your existing credit card gives you amazing cashback on travel. You want to spend a credit card that gives you amazing cashback on your other big category, which is groceries. So, when you are buying travel stuff, you use your old credit card. When you're buying groceries, you use your new credit card. And your rich BFF recommended a quiz for figuring out the best credit card for you. The quiz is smartasset.com/creditcards/findmycard. I'm going to link it below in the description. And that quiz takes in a bunch of factors about what you spend money on, what kinds of perks you care about, and it recommends a great credit card for you. And another consideration for when to open a new credit card is it can be a good idea to open a new credit card before you have a big upcoming purchase. But listen closely because there's some caveats here. When you open a new credit card, you have a rare opportunity to get a ton of cash back in the first few months. So, for example, a card might say, if you spend $3,000 in the first 3 months, you get an additional 4,500 points. So, if you already know you're going to spend $3,000 on travel this upcoming month, you might as well have that $3,000 purchase accrue to a new credit card's spending bonus. So, you might think, okay, this sounds too good to be true. Does that mean every time I prepare to travel, I should open up a new credit card? No, do not do that. If you open 2-minute credit cards, like if you open a new credit card every month, credit card companies might assume the worst about you and ding you in your credit score, right? Again, this kind of goes back to this general principle that credit companies tend to assume the worst about you and will penalize consumers based on like the worst interpretation of your actions, essentially. If you open too many credit cards at once, credit cards might assume the worst, and they might assume that you're doing it because you don't have enough cash to pay off your expenses. And so you're going to open a ton of credit cards, put a lot of money on credit to pay for these big expenses. And so even though that's not true for you, That's why when you open a lot of new credit cards in quick succession, your credit score will go down a little bit. And so it's not great to open a credit card or multiple credit cards before you apply for a new loan. Because when you apply for a new loan, you want your credit score to be as high as possible. All right, so those were five top actionable things I learned from Your Rich BFF. The first one is to set up an account aggregator like Mint. The second is to automate paying off your full credit card bill. The third is to set up a high yield savings account. The fourth is how to use credit card points and cash back and why it's often smart to use credit card points on travel. And the fifth is going through this checklist when deciding whether to open a new credit card. I learned all of this from her in a very short amount of time. And watching her videos inspired me to look into other resources about personal finance. And it feels awesome to have a little bit more confidence and context about something that I used to be so afraid of. And now that I have this context, when I'm reading new articles, I have a knowledge base that makes it easy for me to understand these new articles, contextualize them, and reason through them. And it makes these new facts feel less random. And so I hope, and I know this is a lot of information that I just shared, but, and you can listen to this episode again and again, and you can watch Your Rich BFF videos again and again until you internalize it. It's not easy and fast to internalize this information, but once you do, it makes learning new things that much faster. And so I hope this has been as empowering and fun and eye-opening for you as it has been for me. For me, with this newfound confidence, I am planning to learn more about investing safely in the stock market. It's something that I've always wanted to learn more about, but I felt so stupid about and behind about. But now I feel a little bit more literate and confident, so I will be doing that. And maybe I'll give you a little report once I learn more. All right, thank you for being with me on the beginning of my journey to learn more about personal finance. If you enjoyed this episode and found it helpful, think of a friend who might enjoy it as well and let them know that we are on every podcast platform. If you'd like to support Bamboo and Glass in other ways, you can also treat us, me and Tan, to a coffee or a boba through our Buy Me a Coffee page, which is linked in the episode description below. And if you want to hear more from us or if you have questions for us, you can reach out to us on Instagram or TikTok at Bamboo and Glass. You can also invite us to speak at your school or your company. We've done talks about a wide range of topics based on your interests, and we would love to hear from you via email at bambooandglass@gmail.com. With that, thank you for listening, and I will talk to you next Sunday. Bye.